Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Death and taxes. They've been the two things that have been said to be certainties in life. What I find really interesting, though, is that we're very keen to talk about taxes. We don't seem to be as keen to talk about death. Why is that? Our next guest has written a book about the whole topic. He says there's much to be gained from talking about death. In fact, he actually says that dying can teach the living quite a few lessons. His name is Dr. Robert Wise. He is a church pastor, and he's written a book called Crossing the Threshold of Eternity, and he joins us now. Robert, welcome to Open House.
Oh, I'm delighted to be with you. Thank you.
Very interesting, isn't it? We don't like to talk about death very often. Why is that? Is it just simply because it's just a negative subject?
Well, I think we're afraid of death. I think that many of us have seen movies of all kinds of horror movies that also have increased our sense of fear. It's such an unknown subject, we retreat from it. It's been my experience over the years of working with people and standing by the bed of people who were dying that so many people simply don't know what to say, that they retreat, and they miss important opportunities not only to be of help to the dying, but to learn some things about themselves that would diminish their own fear.
So two reasons. We're afraid of our own death, but we're also afraid of not having the right words when we stand by somebody who is suffering.
I think so, and I've noticed that often at that moment, people will leave the room. They'll run away. They don't know what to say. The person who they've had a good relationship with in the past suddenly has become somebody different. They've been metamorphed into something that they just don't know how to relate to, and that's unfortunate.
I think often people who are on their deathbed, to use that phrase, are starting to review their life, and they're starting to maybe even have some regrets. And when those regrets start to come out, it's hard to know what to do with those as well.
That's frightening to many people. I've also noticed that many people, as they're dying, start to speak in a symbolic language, and they're often written off as hallucinating, when in fact they're talking very much like people dream in a symbolic way. And if we listen to the symbols carefully and start to unfold them, they'll teach us a great deal about where the person is and sometimes a great deal about ourselves.
Okay, well, let's talk about some of those symbols. What have you come across?
Well, some years ago, I studied in Zurich, Switzerland at the Jung Institute, studied dreams and how to interpret them and to use them in counseling. And I became aware that there are some universal symbols that people use, like a house or like a card for themselves. And when they appear in a dream, they then give us the clue of how to understand what that person's need is or what the unsolved issue in their life is. Now, in a similar way, as people are dying, that appears. Let me give you an example that I have in the book. A friend of mine who is a nurse in Florida had a patient who was kicking. His feet were moving like he was riding a bicycle. He was kicking the blankets off. And she got close to him, and she said, where are you going? He said, got to get on the bus, got to get on the bus. Bus getting away, get away, got to get on the bus, got to get on the bus. She looked at him. This black man had come from a relatively poor background. She thought about his situation, and then she leaned closer and she said, why do you have to get on the bus? The bus is leaving, bus is leaving, got to get on the bus, it's leaving, it's going to leave me here, going to leave me here. She leaned back and she said, I don't think the bus is going to leave. And he sort of slowed down. He said, what do you mean? What do you mean? She said, I think I know who's driving the bus. Who's driving the bus? She said, I think Jesus is driving the bus. Jesus is driving the bus. I think Jesus is driving. Oh, my goodness. She said, do you think Jesus is leaving? Oh, no, Jesus wouldn't leave. She said, I think you can relax. You can get on the bus. You don't have to worry. He quit running in the bed, turned over, and in about a minute and a half was gone. What he was saying was not a hallucination, but it was the expression of a fear that he might be left. And she had asked him earlier, do you know Jesus? So when she, oh, yes, sir, I know Mr. Jesus. I know Mr. Jesus, yes, sir. And she helped him, in a symbolic way, allow his faith to answer his final problem.
Okay.
What I've observed over and over with people, as they come to that end, it's been my observation that they review their life, they look at the details of the past, and they need to make peace with the past. It's very hard for a person to die peacefully if they've not made peace with their past.
Mm. This is Open House. Robert Wise is our guest. He's written this book called Crossing the Threshold of Eternity, What the Dying Can Teach the Living. So, Robert, those people who are nearing their final days, when they are on their last moments in life, what are the typical things that they are going through? Are they reflecting much? They're thinking about putting peace to the past, as you just mentioned there. What else are they going through?
Well, a great many times they begin to withdraw. And we will assume that they're in a coma when actually they're not. They may be highly aware. Situation of a man who his family wanted to talk to him. He wouldn't talk to them. The nurse came in. The nurse was attending him. And suddenly he opened his eyes and she said, "Well, your family would like to talk to you." And he said, "I don't want to talk to them." And she said, "Why?" He said, "I'm watching movies of my life. I'm watching a review of everything that's happened in the past. I don't want to stop. I don't want to talk to them." And he was not out of touch. He was very much in touch with what was going on. But what took precedent was the way in which he reviewed his life, and he took care of the things that needed to be corrected.
Are there any common regrets of people who are nearing death?
There are, and they range from very serious behavior to very minor incidents. It seems like that the person who has carried with them a fear, a hate, it doesn't make any difference what the reality is. It within them has come a resentment that they will often need to find resolution of that, and they may want someone to listen who can say it's okay. One of the things that I discovered that was a really powerful thing about the Christian faith is that it brings with it the capacity to lead a person into a forgiving experience, a resolving experience. And many times, whoever we had the conflict with has been dead and gone for a long time, and there's no way to go back and touch that history except as the individual finds their own inner forgiveness, their own inner healing, their own inner sense of resolution.
Mm. Well, in the book, you do talk about what we could be calling near-death experiences. Now, in the past, they've kind of been relegated in many ways to, the kooky cable TV programs. Mm-hmm. You're convinced with the stories that you've come across?
I am. I am because they're such remarkable stories. And they have their own internal consistency. For example, the people who have had these experiences never meet someone who is alive now. They meet someone who has lived in the past. And the experiences are highly consistent with what we would consider to be reality. They have structure, they have content, they have continuity. For example, I tell a story of a girl that was in a group that I worked with, and I had totally forgotten this until my wife reminded me of it, and I called Dee Dee, and I said, her name was Dee Dee Bailey, and I said, "Dee Dee, I want to remember your story." What had happened, she had had a terrible kidney stone, and it was a very large kidney stone. They took her to the hospital, and her doctor had to be gone over the weekend and left her to be catheterized by another doctor who apparently simply forgot it or missed it. And about 24-30 hours later, she was in enormous pain, and they suddenly realized what had happened. They came in to work with her, and it sent her into a shock. And as she deteriorated and her organs began to stop, she suddenly saw herself on the ceiling or standing in the ceiling looking down on her body, and she heard the nurse say, "Doctor, we're losing her," and watched the doctor feverishly trying to do something to revive her. And that's a fairly common thing with people who have these returns, that there will be an out-of-body experience. And then at that moment, she felt angelic beings taking her somewhere, and she began to move through a realm that was filled with tremendous, beautiful music, but nothing that she had ever heard before. It was not like any form of music she knew, but it was more magnificent and more beautiful. And she came out at the end of this place, and suddenly stepped out into a realm of eternity, and before her stood the figure of Jesus Christ. Hmm. And he reached out, put his arms around her, and she told me, she said, it was so intensely peaceful that even though I had two daughters, two young girls at home, I was willing to stay there. I have never experienced the peaceful, the joyfulness of what happened to me. And at that moment, the Christ said to her, but you have a mission. You have something you've got to do. I want you to fulfill that. You have some teaching that must go on. You need to return. And she said, as he said that, it was like a bungee cord suddenly jerked her backwards, and she went flying backwards and just, in effect, plopped down in her body and opened her eyes, and suddenly the nurse yelled, doctor, she opened her eyes, and she returned. And when she was telling me this, I had not seen her for probably, 10 years. And I said, well, what are you doing now, Dee Dee? And she said, oh, I have a mission to college students. I'm at the University of Oklahoma, and I'm teaching a class of college students. I'm teaching them what you taught me about prayer so many years ago. That's a remarkable experience, but it's not like a hallucination. It's a consistent, intact story. Many of these stories have that quality to them.
Yes. Fascinating. This is Open House. We're talking to Robert Wise. He is a church pastor. He's also an author of a book called Crossing the Threshold of Eternity. It's quite fascinating. Now, of course, whenever we talk about near-death experiences, the stories tend to be positive, like what you've just talked about there. Is there any documented research on negative near-death experiences?
Yes, there is, and there are many other people who have had a dark experience, a frightening experience. If we put it into the categories of heaven and hell, or positive and negative, depending on what images people use, it doesn't fit the fire and brimstone type of image as much as it fits a dark, foreboding, being cut off, being absorbed in a total depression. And there are a number of those stories that I have run into or picked up from people who ran into them that tell me that there is another side as well.
And it's a place of consciousness.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Yes. It is pause for thought, isn't it? I mean, again, some would say, well, this is just self-fulfilling prophecy. It's just the mind. It's just the psyche exploring all of its different images and symbols that it's collected over a lifetime of experience in this world. How would you respond to somebody who actually says that and says, well, look, even the negative stuff is
well, it's
simply
that? Well, I have a chapter in the book where I look at the various responses. In effect, it's in your head. It's in your stomach. It's what you took, so forth and so on. There is no question that there are drugs and drugs for pain that have a hallucinatory quality to them or create hallucinations, and that is a possibility. Doctors have noted that being deprived of oxygen can create a hallucinatory condition, and I'm sure that's true. Most of these experiences, though, have the quality of composition and continuity and truthfulness about them that they don't fit what happens when either drugs or physical limitations create some other kind of hallucinatory event.
Mm. What do you say to the person who is on their deathbed who doesn't believe in a heaven or a hell? They've got no concept of an afterlife. And there's a sense there where, with what you know as a pastor, what you believe in the Christian scriptures, what you believe with the stories that you've heard of people with positive and negative near-death experiences, how do you approach that person who is hopeless and yet feels that there is no afterlife?
Well, I, of course, respect that person's experience and respect their convictions, and I don't try to do something that coerces on them my ideas or my beliefs. But I try to explore with them, what is it that has put you in the position that you now hold? What is it that you think? What is it that you feel? Because so often, as death approaches, the boldness of the sort of sophomoric agnosticism begins to fade pretty rapidly, begins to be very clear. Listen, this is no simple matter here. This is an ultimate reality. There are people who simply hold, that's it, and when they quit breathing, it's all over, and that's the end of that. But I try to also share with them the logic that I've found is inherent in the Christian faith. In the Scripture, Jesus says to us, I am the way, the truth, and the life. It's become clear to me, as I have my daughter-in-law is an ophthalmologist here. I have a number of members of my family who have been involved in medical work. No one has ever been able to tell me what life is. They can tell me when it quits or why it quits, but life has its own transcendent quality to it. It seems to me that something happens in an encounter that we have with divinity, an encounter that we have with the reality of God as it is manifest in Jesus Christ, that communicates tangibly life. It puts back in us life. And I try to help people who are dying understand that while their heart may stop, their kidneys may quit, their body may finish its mobility, they still have the possibility of being filled with a life that transcends the moment of death and takes them to another place.
I think as we talk about this, it's important for us to consider that final day for ourselves. We don't know when it's going to come. It could come suddenly. It's a horrible thing to think about, but it could come suddenly. It could be after years and years of a wonderful experience on this planet Earth. How can we prepare well for that final day?
Well, it seems to me that it's very important for me every day that I wake up to make sure that I am not carrying the debris of the past with me. Now, that's easy to say when we've not been through any horrendous things. But sooner or later, in my experience at least, everybody goes through some very difficult backwoods experiences. And sometimes they're our fault. Sometimes we're the victim of what people have done to us, or we're the victim of misunderstanding or misinterpretation. And it's easy for that to fester. I don't want that to be with me any longer than my recognition of it and my resolution of it. And if I can't do that on my own, I go see a counselor, a pastor, a spiritual director, somebody who will help me do that. So I think that's very important to keep the record straight, keep a clear record with ourselves and our past. Secondly, I think it seems to me it's a very essential thing for us to look at the issues of eternity and time. Is it possible that we have missed a dimension that is right here in our midst that makes the total difference in how we understand ourselves, how we understand our identity, and where we're going? I've come to discover that it is the intention of God to have a relationship, to have a connection or a connectedness with every human being on this earth, and that is possible for anyone to achieve. We call it prayer, but prayer is a mode to say that I reach out beyond myself into a realm that I cannot see or quantitatively demonstrate, but is there. And actually, we live what we think that sounds strange, but we live like that all the time. I can't prove to you that there's such a thing as love, but I live out of that every day of my life.
Yeah.
As we enter that world and we are met by, as Jesus Christ conveyed to us, the Heavenly Father, I think that's the most essential thing anyone can do in preparing for their death.
Yeah.
And it gives them life today.
And if what you're saying is true with these stories that you've told of us, you know, with experiences beyond the grave, if what the Bible says is true, if what these stories are actually saying somehow correlates to that, we do need to consider this whole idea that there will be a reckoning. There will be a day where we actually do stand before God in some kind of way and answer for our lives. I guess we also need to prepare for that too, don't we?
For me, tremendously exciting thing about the Christian faith is that in Jesus Christ, he brings to us not a word of condemnation, but a word of grace, a word that says to us that through him and with him and by him, the mistakes, the sin, the transgressions of the past are healed through his love and through his reconciliation. And boy, I tell you, for somebody who's made as many mistakes as I have, that's exciting.
I'm with you. Robert, fascinating to talk to you. Thanks for your time tonight.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed being with you, Sheridan.
That's Robert Wise. He's a church pastor. He's also written this book called Crossing the Threshold of Eternity. Sounds fascinating, doesn't it? The subtitle is What the Dying Can Teach the Living. It's out through Regal Books.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.